Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzstrauber. On today's show, the future of tech policy. With such an open-ended and large topic, we need a large personality to talk about it. So I'd like to introduce to the show for the first time, Austin Carson, the relatively new executive director of Tech Freedom. Prior to that, he was the legislative director for Chairman Michael McCaul of the Homeland Security Committee in the House. And before that, he was a tech staffer for Blake Farenthold, another Texas congressman who we've talked about on the show before because he's really interested in some of the issues Tech Freedom works on. But without further ado, Austin, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Evan, thanks for having me. It's an honor.
So I guess the first most obvious question is that you were in Congress doing all this stuff on tech policy, right? You know, trying to bring people together, pass bills. What led you to leave Congress and come to our lovely little think tank called Tech Freedom?
Besides the unbelievably lucrative nonprofit arena.
Yes.
No, honestly, I spent so much time inside of the Hill trying to work with other staffers, trying to work with stakeholders, whether that means people that are making cool tech stuff, people that are modifying it or building on top of it, or everyday people that are using these products, or would be benefited by an evolution of these products, to figure out, you know, what's the right path forward? What kind of information do we need to get to that right path forward? What's holding us back institutionally or practically? And the more that I continued to think about it, the more I realized that it was going to require more than all of us living in our silos, even as we tried to do things like when we started the Tech Staff Association to help bring people together and deconflict, that taking a step back and looking at this in an overarching sense is the right thing to do right now. Because in my personal opinion, we are on the precipice of a sea change in the way that we look at technology, the way that technology impacts our lives, and the way that it's deeply ingrained in our lives. I mean, right now, I think a lot of people, they have their smartphones, you know, they're browsing the internet, watching video, using some artificial intelligence assistance. You know, we've got driverless cars testing, there's drone stuff happening. We're all like kind of excited about it, but I think that there's not exactly the perception and understanding of how much it's about to change and how deeply complex those issues are going to be, and what the benefits are if we get it right and what the consequences are if we get it wrong.
Right. You know, just looking at tech policy over the past couple of decades, you know, if we think about tech policy as it relates to the commercial internet as we know it, so like the mid-90s until now, there's been a lot of cliches about tech policy, some of them positive, some of them negative, some just like, hey, you know, we're kind of all pro-tech, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. Let's let this cool thing evolve, you know, largely unregulated and everyone benefits. And clearly that's not necessarily the case today. People are very much in their camps. You've got some partisan issues that break down on party lines. You've got other issues that don't break down on party lines where it's more about your views on national security and law enforcement. But all this to say, is it fair to say that, you know, during your time in Congress and what you see now, that this kind of bipartisan consensus about tech policy has really fractured?
To some extent. And I think a lot of that has to do, again, with the idea that we're cemented in our concept of what our current state of affairs is, right? Because we're used to broadband as it exists right now, because we're used to some of these services as they exist, now we're getting into the space where we're like, maybe we should just slow it all down and freeze it in place. I'm fine. You know, I'm 10 megabit downstream. I've got Netflix. I don't need to think about some future thing that could happen. Or, you know, talking about even, you know, improvements in cars and stuff, people are a little apprehensive. So I think that you find more and more people that are getting away from some of the experimentation and investment and evolutionary concepts of what technology should continue to become and how it's going to change, and getting into let's just get to a stasis point where it feels safe and not scary. And then we can think about it again after I don't feel scared.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to think about this because you look at other industries, whether it's the oil industry or the appliance industry, and these are 100-year-old, if not more, sometimes these industries, and they're often very tightly regulated. There's a long history of lobbying and relationship building and all this stuff. And with tech, people often said, you know, Silicon Valley thought it was above Washington, right? It didn't need to engage in government affairs. It didn't need to have lobbyists in DC because why should I bother with that? I'm just doing my thing out here in California. Why should I have to deal with people who don't even understand my issue? And I guess now, you know, we're only 2 decades into the commercial internet, but you're right. I think people have started to create silos. Like, we've got social media and I've been interacting with that for 10 years and I kind of know what it's like. And I've got YouTube and I've got video, and we act like this is going to be the way things
right.
are.
You know, the funny thing about that is, even with legacy industries, you're starting to have some innovation bolted onto them, right? You've got sensors, connected devices. It's not just Alexa. It's not just your light bulbs, which is actually kind of interesting in its own right. It is a full complex of home automation of information that you didn't previously have. Now, this is still at the very beginning stage. Most people spend time just yelling at whatever their virtual assistant is.
That's basically when we say the Internet of Things, right. Like the Internet of Things in my life is yelling at the Google Home from the shower to either increase or decrease the volume. It seems like very small potatoes, but at the industry level, Internet of Things is much different than what the consumer might be interacting with right now.
Right, exactly. And these things are so the funny thing is Jeff Bezos is
the CEO of Amazon.
Right. The CEO of Amazon's yearly letter to investors just came out, which is actually very, very interesting. And if you haven't read it, I would recommend that you do. But he makes some great points. First of all, they're always on day one, which means that if they get complacent and get to quote day two, they're going to die a slow and painful death, I think, pretty much by his own words, right? So, and yet they're still selling out and can't keep stock of day one, which is the current Alexa model, or like, you know, I guess it's the third iteration, but it's a very similar concept.
Right.
But if you look a little bit down the road, which is what they're doing all the time, which we don't necessarily have the visibility into, you know, they're seeing this whole tapestry of connected devices with natural language processing where Alexa sounds like a person, hears your voice like a person, and that it effortlessly controls these devices. Now, there's obviously a lot of super complicated stuff in the background that have privacy concerns, cybersecurity concerns. But they know that, and they know that it's an existential thing for them. So I think that we have to look at this as a full complex of, are these things evolving in our physical lives and getting the digital components baked in an elegant way? And the only way that's going to happen is if we're A, able to have the information that we need to have for both policymakers and consumers to understand not even the risks or the concerns, but the optimism, like the beautiful thing that we could have if we can get this right and not stop that development.
So, I want to seize on that because, you know, if you're a critic of Congress and if you're a tech-based critic of Congress, maybe you run a startup or you're an engineer and you just look at Washington, this is what you might reasonably think. They don't understand my business or my technology, but that doesn't stop them from trying to write a bill to regulate it. Everything's negative. It's always like we're fighting over net neutrality, we're fighting over encryption, we're fighting over cybersecurity. It's always a battle and it's always very negative. And it's kind of crazy that for the most exciting industry in America, I mean, obviously I'm biased, but tech is a big bright spot in our industry, in our economy. It's always innovating and there's so much economic value.
And just really cool.
Yeah. And for the policy to have just become so shitty and the temperature of the debate is so hot. I mean, how did we get there? And would you agree with that assessment of where Congress is now, that they're fighting over the current state of affairs? By the time they're done fighting over it, the industry and technology has already blown past them. And the regulations and the debates are not forward-thinking enough that we're always battling over the last software update.
Right. So I think, I mean, that's a pretty good way to put it. And there's a couple factors there from my experience, right? First and foremost, at any given time, every staffer has like 2 to 8% of their brain to dedicate to any issue, unless it's their only job to think about, right? The other side of that is you have to look at what companies and most members of Congress and even committees do and how they're interacting with an issue as A, generally reactive, and B, in a quarterly earnings mentality, right? So they've got a fight that's coming up that's either existential or it's a significant business problem or it could lead to a long tail problem, but they only have the time and energy to focus on a specific thing. And they all, like, honestly, it's not even necessarily in the best interest of any specific stakeholder to come in and be like, hey, here's everything we're thinking about. Here's all the problems that could happen. We want to work through this with you. Because most of the time, the government is tuned to see something as a nail and hit it with a hammer.
Like when there's a hack, right?
Right,
so like you
right.
see everyone cares about cybersecurity after the Sony hack or after the OPM hack.
Nope. And the solutions are dumb. They're just right. like, hey, the first thing that comes out of somebody's mouth that isn't on the committee is like, I don't know, we just make it mandatory to make it not hackable.
Yeah. You
know,
we'll never get cybered again.
Right, right. I mean, it's that. And so part of the problem is you have some subject matter expertise that resides in specific committees of jurisdiction, and you have some staffers that are just naturally interested in these things. But outside of that, it's a lot of, A, the political fighting is worse than ever. I mean, this administration has made everybody totally crazy in terms of their reactions to stuff. I mean, the broadband privacy CRA that just came through, it wasn't even in effect. It wasn't like the internet changed at all, but because it was something that was easy to optically blow up and be like, look at Republicans, they want to take your privacy. Not like, hey, we just wanted the FTC to police privacy as they always did before. And generally, we would prefer something flexible, like where they come and take some action against you if you do something bad, as opposed to something compliance-based, which generally freezes everything in place, right?
Right. So, that's an important point to make for tech. I mean, if you're thinking about how to create regulations that are flexible, that don't stifle innovation, part of that is outcomes driven. It's saying like, I want my customers' products to work. I want their data to be secure and I want their privacy to be protected. And that's different from trying to write a regulation that says, here's your privacy policy. Like mm-hmm. the government is writing your privacy policy. That's different than saying you write the privacy policy, but we will be there if you screw this up or you lie to your customer or commit fraud. And these regulations exist for every industry.
Right.
And you don't necessarily need some brand new thing for tech, but I think because tech is new, people just assume it's unregulated and that it's like a wild west.
Right. A lot of times that is the case. I think in that specific instance, honestly, it was just because people are like, yeah, we like some shiny social media, our phone stuff, but nah, we don't really like telecoms. You know, ISP is not our favorite.
Yeah.
And that's where that comes down. Honestly, to me, everybody I've talked to, serious policy analyst or not, it's pretty much like you keep drilling down and not turtles all the way. It stops it. I don't like my telecom.
Yeah, anyone who's had a bad customer service call, you know, right. It's understandable.
Right. I mean, that like picks up a lot of airspace. But this brings me back to why I wanted to join Tech Freedom and why I think this is really important for right now. Like a lot of those debates on a fundamental level aren't super complicated, right? Like there's not too much technologically involved. A lot of it is philosophical or ideological in terms of how you think that regulatory machine should work, what you think that it does to technological development, and even what you think the possibility of evolution is for a specific part of an industry, right? I think most people can't imagine an ISP doing something creative or exciting. But if you look at like the cell phone industry, for instance, you have things like Cricket and Boost Mobile that have come up offering some type of combined package that has some subsidization from the industry side, and it has some limitations on the services, but it lets people have, you know, effectively an unlimited plan for like $30 to $50 a month. And it doesn't have all the bells and whistles, but it's a novel thing that provides access and greater stuff. So, you know, looking ahead to far more complicated arenas, like greater artificial intelligence baked into a lot more things like autonomous vehicles, like holographic overlays, like Magic Leap stuff that's about to come out, and HoloLens that is also about to come out from Microsoft. These questions are going to get far more complex, not only in terms of how these devices are processing data and what type of data they're coming in and how that data is connected, but even bigger things like what does that mean for, well, we probably won't be driving by then, but what does that mean for distracted driving? Like, what does that mean for even social effects? Like, what does that mean for education? What does that mean for healthcare? And this is going to be super cross-jurisdictional across all committees. Each committee and each federal agency is going to be competing for first chair to be the ones to lay the laws down.
It's not going to just be judiciary and commerce, which like right now, right. If you say like, who does tech policy in Congress? It's like, well, it's the FCC, it's the FTC. For drones, right. It's the FAA. Right. For legislation, it's the commerce and the judiciary. And it's all very siloed. And you can imagine right. That if...
But even that's breaking down already. Yeah. I mean, that's already breaking down. I mean, right now... if you're talking about something involving drones, you're going to have the FAA, you're going to have the FTC, you're going to have intellectual property concerns,
airports.
You're going to have judiciary, right, you're going to have T&I involved. I mean, this is already an issue. So some people are trying to address that from like a legislative vehicle side, like Deputy Whip McHenry has a bill that's pretty interesting in trying to make little working groups within agencies to communicate. But that is a scalpel against a problem that really requires us to like pretty much take the Lego box of a partially assembled Lego thing and like shake it up, put it back on the table and follow the instructions, you know, for a different, yeah. You know, we built the wrong thing for what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Right. So, it's not to say that I think anybody has a grand vision for how to reimagine that, but I think that it's extraordinarily important that we find better ways for people to coordinate who are interested and want to understand these issues, B, better ways of conveying that information, and C, get people to be involved. Like the folks that are in the Valley, the folks that aren't at a place to go try to lobby for a specific tax break or a specific thing or regulatory structure, this is an opportunity for us to give context to people making decisions, for us to take what, you know, not just aggregate data about how people act, but actually project some type of possible vision for what could be developed if we get this right. And also to explain what parts of our system, that have been more flexible, that have allowed greater, use and repurposing of things that we already have, information that we have within schemes of protection, right? And a flexible regulatory system to allow folks to experiment a little bit without just saying like, whoa, why? Come tell us what you want to build, and then we'll tell you if it's okay. Yeah, because we're not sure yet. This is like Adam Theurer's principle. Right. Precautionary principle. And then, you know, Adam Theurer and Mercatus Center talk a lot about permissionless innovation, which I think is a super important thing, not only to understand that that's been the case in this sector specifically, but that is, we can't imagine all the outcomes. Nobody possibly can. And honestly, a lot of the times, we're going to be wrong. If you look at those AT&T videos, like 1995, what's it going to be like in 20 years? Yeah. They got some stuff super right and some stuff super wrong. It's really but it's cool. Still really cool to look
it's
at.
It's informative because then it really shows you just how little you know. And right. And anyone who claims that they know how this industry is going to develop over the next 10, 20, 30 years is probably wrong.
Right.
And there's some things you can obviously anticipate, like what's the altitude limit for drones that is safe? Like, fine. But there's so
but
much.
But even that could change. Yeah, who knows?
There's so much that's going to be messy. And really, you know, I think part of what Tech Freedom was originally founded to do and what we really want to do, really ramp up, is this idea of optimism and dynamism, right?
Like, right.
Technology, for the most part, it comes out and 99.9% of its use will be for good. There will always be malicious actors, and you can think of them as fraudsters, you know, people who want to
shysters, hucksters,
hate speech, like all that kind of stuff, hacking, right? That's going to happen, but you want to make sure that you allow the 99.9% of people to enjoy something and not let it get ruined by that 0.01%.
Right. And you can take action against that 0.01%.
Exactly.
That's the point.
Don't necessarily write these strict things about like, this is how the product develops. There's a presumption that you're operating in good faith. And when you violate that presumption of good faith, then government steps in. I mean, that might be a bit of an oversimplification, but if you had to kind of sketch out how policymakers should approach tech.
Well, and I don't even necessarily think it's a presumption that they're, I mean, there's a lot of equities at stake, right? Like you can presume, like they have a fiduciary, you know, companies have a fiduciary responsibility to serve their shareholders, right? And then they have a natural response or a natural expectation of responsibility to serve their consumers and people that are using their products, right? Obviously that goes way crazy sometimes. I mean, you can look at Enron. Let's all talk about United Airlines.
Wells
that's
Fargo.
All news. Yeah, right. Wells Fargo, right? These things obviously go wrong, but I think it's more of a presumption that entities are acting in their own interests and that the government exists largely for the purpose in this instance of protecting the public good and the public. But what that doesn't mean is that we should dictate how things happen, because we know as a fact, as the government, I mean, we just talked about how bad we are a lot of times at like grasping complex or even not complex issues. It's insane to think that we're going to understand every positive and negative use case and either build out the positive ones or prevent the negative ones. But we do have a responsibility, I think, to help illustrate some of those for the purpose of consideration and thought, and also to be mindful of what we don't know and to prepare for that, not in a way necessarily to stop it on the forefront, but to understand what is the most responsible way to react to something or to be prepared to enforce something, considering some damage has actually been caused, right? Like, we have to be willing to accept some minimal point of risk, obviously specific, like human physical concerns, like bodily harm.
Yeah, that's always first and foremost.
Like we're gonna be concerned about these things, and we need to mitigate or prevent them to the greatest extent practicable. But you can't freeze everything in place for the hopes that nothing bad ever happens. Like,
or in order to have people catch up, right? Because obviously, tech economy is going to move faster than tech policy ability to regulate specifically, and it's just unreasonable to expect, given the state of affairs, given what you've said about staff, limited resources, you've got a million issues, you've got healthcare, you've got Syria, whatever, and you're trying to tell people that they need to learn about tech. It is unreasonable to expect government to be able to keep up. Maybe that's a silly goal. It's more about creating a framework that just is flexible enough that the capacities of government are taken into account and it allows industry to move. I mean, right. I think it's crazy that we cannot get to a place where every single office has like a Mark Zuckerberg on their staff. It's just not going to happen.
Well, definitely not that. but I will, well, maybe some future Mark Zuckerbergs. I mean, we've had some folks come out of tech policy that have gone on to build cool startups or work in cool startups, right?
That's a great story.
Let's not be overly optimistic. But I will say this, and this leads directly into what I think, what I would like for us to do as Tech Freedom, what I think is going to add the most value. And honestly, I want to hear from everybody, because this is a serious enough thing and an iterative enough process that it's important. And we have to, and we're going to bring together people that want to work on these issues, that are naturally interested or could be interested, with other people who have practical experience, so that we can hash out A, what's really going on, B, build relationships where folks can work in good faith to try to do, and I know this sounds naive and crazy, but the right thing, not just for the development of the industry, but for the fact that if we get this right and we move into the second stage of the post-internet or the internet existing era, it's going to dramatically improve the human condition, right? If we have greater efficiency in our lives, if we have 30,000 fewer deaths on roads a year, right? If we're able to deliver food, medicine, if we're able to communicate with our families much more easily, if we're able to travel much more rapidly on supersonic jets or through Hyperloop, if we're able to do more commercial spaceflight, if we're able to launch more satellites and get internet satellites, right? If we're able to devise new medications that are based upon some statistical analysis or some data-driven analysis of all these cases and our genomics being mapped, which all of these things are happening right now.
That's exciting.
It's very exciting. And we have the opportunity to do one of two things. Like, look at the goose that's halfway laying a golden egg and then throw it in the freezer. Like, I don't know, man, that half golden egg, it looks fine.
But we need to study it first.
Right. Or we can look and say, like, legitimately, there's some stuff that when this egg hatches is going to be pretty concerning. We should think about it. But we should do that in context of A, how our system has helped technology develop and what it has been in practice. And B, we should bring together people who are imagining the future, the futurists that work for some of these companies who work in academia, and talk about, where do you see this going? We in Congress, assuming that any action we start taking now is going to come to fruition 5 years from now, how should we be thinking about this so that we don't get to the end of a legislative process and realize we solved a problem that no longer exists and accidentally made a legacy actor sustainable for another 20 years?
Yeah, it's amazing how sometimes the regulation that's designed to protect the little guy actually ends up protecting the big guy.
Yeah, I can't imagine. It's bizarre.
Well, I think, folks, there you have it. I mean, there's basically an open invitation to anyone who wants to come participate in this process. I mean, anyone who's willing to hear from a diverse array of viewpoints and operate in good faith and try to find solutions. I mean, I think that is really the kind of the grand vision that Austin has laid out for tech freedom. So any final words before we sign off?
It's good to be here, guys. It's going to be really crazy, but I'm glad we're all doing it together.
Well, I'll quote you where you say basically the future of tech policy is everything's going to be really cool as long as we don't fuck it up.
Yeah, I have said that, but I'm sorry, Mom.
well, actually, we do rate this a podcast on iTunes as explicit for like the one time we drop an F-bomb every 10 episodes, but I think it's totally worth it.
Right.
So on that note, you know where to find us. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Tech Freedom. Send us an email at media@techfreedom.org. We really appreciate your feedback. Write a review of this podcast in the iTunes store because it will help others find the show. And if you really like this podcast, but you also like your own money and not spending it, go to givewithdata.com. You can help us out for free. I swear, there is such a thing as a free lunch. But that's it. We'll see you next time.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.